Thank you to the organizer for inviting me. Excuse me. So Monday, the Dario expose the result we have recently obtained on the Birkhoff normal form in infinite dimension. And today I would like to explain how this abstract result can be useful to obtain some result on the Hamiltonian PDEs. And in particular, I will consider the following Hamiltonian PDEs. I will consider the nonlinear wave equation. So u tt minus uxx, so plus vu square, well, let's say derivative with respect to u, g of x u, but also the nonlinear Schrödinger equation, so I ut minus uxx plus vu plus derivative with respect to u bar of g x u and u bar. So in this case, u is a real function, in this case it's a complex function. And in both cases, it's a 1D equation. So x is in the interval 0, pi, t is in R. And I'm going to consider the Dirichlet condition, boundary condition. Actually, if I have time, I will make some comments on the periodic case, which is more complicated at the end of the talk. If I have time, we consider the periodic boundary condition. Okay, that's the 1D situation. And I'm going also to consider the case of nonlinear Schrödinger, but in D-dimensional case. So it's the same equation, but now it's Laplacian U. And it's still a multiplicative potential V. I'll take a convolution potential V plus derivative with respect to U bar G, X, U, and U bar. And in this case, well, X is in the toes of dimension D. So it's periodic boundary condition. And again, T is in R. And okay, so I can give an idea of the result we obtain for this equation. More or less, the idea is to give a description, quite precise description of the dynamics for large time. Large time means T smaller than C epsilon to minus R, where epsilon is the size of the initial datum, so U zero in some norm S, subless norm S. R is some fixed index which can be very large. For each R, I can define epsilon such that this is true. Well, I am going to give all the conditions later on. For the moment, I want only to give an idea of the result, okay? And further, we obtained also that the solution remains close to a finite dimensional toes. Again, for this time. Large time. Okay, so now I have to state a precise result, of course. And in order to do this, to give a precise statement, I'm going to describe an abstract, well, to give the result for an abstract 1D model. 1D model. Because, of course, the results are not applied to NLS and NLW, but to also other PDEs. Okay, so I have to define the phase space, and the phase space will be PS, which is the cross the product of BS by BS. Variable are QP, PQ, anyway. And BS is a subspace of the Sobolev space on the torus, so in R divided by 2 pi z, and it's real. Some subspace because of the Dirichlet condition. And well, we put the standard symplectic form on this phase space in such a way that the Hamilton equation reads Q, well, P dot equal minus gradient with respect to Q of H. H is the Hamiltonian of the system, and Q dot is the gradient of P H. Okay? That's the Hamilton equation. And sometimes I will use also the complex variable, that means C equal P plus IQ divided by the square root of 2, and eta, the complex conjugate of this, so P minus IQ, square root of 2. And in this, variable, the equation reads I psi dot equal minus, or, well, it depends, gradient with respect to eta of H. I think there is okay. So now I have to define the Hamiltonian I consider. So the Hamiltonian decomposed in the quadratic part, H naught, and the non-quadratic part, G, capital G. And of course, I assume that G is of order at least 3. Z is a couple. PQ. Okay, and H naught is the quadratic part. So I want to describe the quadratic part. Well, I have to define, to choose a self-adjoint operator on L2 with a pure point spectrum omega j, let's say for j bigger than 1, and I also define the eigenfunction, let's say tj, so a tj is equal to omega j tj. And actually bs would be the span of the tj. Well, with this basis of BS, we can write P equals the sum of PJ, TJ, and Q equals the sum of QJ, TJ. Okay. And then we define H naught to be the half of the scalar product of A, Q, well, APP plus AQ, Q. And if you make a very simple calculation, you obtain the sum of 1/2 of PJ square plus QJ square omega J, of course. And in the complex variable, you can write H naught equal A psi eta, which is also the same that omega j, tj, eta j. Okay. And actually, I can also define the action, which is tj, eta j, or pj square, qj square, divided by 2. So, I have defined the quadratic part, then I have a non-quadratic part, and the equation then width. So the equation, so the 1D PD I am going to obtain is Q naught equal, so I take this notation, or P naught. Minus A Q, okay, minus gradient with respect to Q of some function G, and Q dot equals A P plus gradient with respect to P of G, of E, or if we prefer, in the complex variable I obtain C dot equal A C plus gradient with respect to C bar of this function G, which is a function of X and so on. Oh, I have to define G with respect to capital G, and well, in fact, G of PQ is the integral of G of X PQ. Okay. So, in this expression, we can recognize NLS when you choose A equal the standard Sturm-Liouville operator, second derivative with respect to X plus V. Okay? Then you put in this equation and you obtain the NLS equation, of course. And to obtain the nonlinear wave equation, you have to work a little bit, because nonlinear wave equation can see it as UTT plus or minus plus S square of U equal the derivative respect to U bar U of G. And the Hamiltonian function for nonlinear wave equation is given by 1/2 of the norm of V square. V is the derivative with respect to T of U, plus A U square, again, is the L2 norm, and plus G. Okay, with the same definition. And if you make the change of variable P equal A minus 1/2 V, and Q equal A 1/2 U, then you obtain again H naught as expected. I mean A Q Q plus A P P. Yes, yes, A square, because in this case I am going to choose not the same notation. Yeah. Yeah, in this case A square is minus dx dx plus V, so it's not a good idea. The okay. Yes, that's true. Okay. So anyway,
because you have twice Q and twice.
Yes, that's true. There is one there and one there. So, yeah. We need a square root. Yeah. That's true. That's simply a zero. Anyway, so okay, so we obtain the equation we want to consider. Okay, maybe you recall from the Dario's talk that in order to apply an infinite-dimensional Birkhoff normal form, there is essentially two conditions. There is one condition on the assumption. One condition on the non-linearity, so on G, and there is one condition on omega. Okay, so one condition on the quadratic part and one condition on the non-quadratic part. So the condition on G is, first, we have to assume that the Hamiltonian vector field associated with G maps the PS into PS in a C-infinity way for all S bigger than some S naught, which is fixed. Can take S naught equal 1/2 or anyway. And the second condition, which is a little bit more complicated, is that G has the Tame modulus property. Modulus property. I will say TM, Tame modulus. And it's a little bit complicated to describe exactly this condition, and I will go back on this condition for later on. For the moment, okay, I recall that we need this C-infinity condition, some additional condition with some senses, and algebraic condition. And the condition on omega is a non-resonance condition, and actually the exact condition is the following one. We have to assume that for all r bigger than 1, there exists alpha gamma positive constants, such that for any n bigger than 1, the following holds true. The sum from G equal 1 to n of omega j kj plus the sum from G equal n, well, for G bigger than n, of omega j lj, this denominator, this divisor is bigger than gamma divided by n to alpha. So n is is an index in some sense. Okay, we take the first part with index smaller than n, and the part with index is bigger than n. And there is some condition on k and l, of course. So for k, the length of k, which is the sum of kj from g equal 1 to n, has to be less than r, and the length of l has to be smaller than 2. And we also assume that the couple kl is not zero, of course, because it's not possible if k and l is zero, it's not possible. So it's something like Melnikov condition, second Melnikov condition, because we only consider two high frequencies, omega j with j large, and we have condition on the small frequencies, which is this one. The big difference with the Melnikov condition is that in the Melnikov condition, the control is with respect to the length of k, and not with respect to the index n. And that's why, it's easy to understand that, because in the KM theory, you fix n, you fix the size of the toes you are going to perturb, but you don't fix r, the order of the polynomial you want to kill. And for Birkhoff theorem, you don't want to fix the torus because you want to obtain the result for all small initial datums. So torus can be very large, infinite dimensional. But you fix the order of the polynomial you want to kill. So in this case, yes, I am going to to say that typically in this example, this condition is satisfied. Well, I am going to explain exactly which is the sense of typical. Well, it's something different because, of course, gamma depends on R, alpha depends on R, and in this case, gamma depends on N and alpha depends on M. So it's tricky to, difficult to really make a comparison. Any?
For every N?
Yeah.
For every N?
Every, yeah. Every. Okay. So, now some comments on the K-modulus property. Well, it turns out that if we assume that CJ are well localized with respect to the exponential, which means exactly the following. So CJ has the eigenfunction. CJ can be read TJK exponential EIKX, and therefore yeah, variable. And then the hypothesis is that for all n, there exists a constant so that the coefficient TJK is smaller than Cn. Well, there is a maximum. Cn 1 over k plus minus j to the n, and the maximum second over the sign plus and minus. So this means that it's close to well localized with respect to exponential CJ well localized with respect to exponential AKX and exponential minus AKX. So typically cosine of sinus are well localized. Yeah. For C infinity potential, it will be okay. So actually, I can say that now, if V is C infinity, then this condition, which is S1 works. Okay. This, for instance, results by, can find this in the paper by Capella and Michagin. Something like that. Not exactly in this way, but or also in a paper by Craig Wayne, but it was exponentially localized. Better. Okay. So with this condition, and also recalling that the time estimate, the following time estimate, U1 S plus U S V 1. So using this condition, using these time estimates, and then using that these time modulus property, which is a little bit complicated, but is stable under composition and under linear combination, then you can prove that finally there is a lot of nonlinearity with time modulus, and in particular, I am going to consider this one to simplify because I have no time. So the integral of G x f of x px qx dx is frameables. Okay. So with this condition, we can verify that these are the tame modules. So this is a good class of nonlinearity. Let's say F and G are smooth. There are some other cases we can consider, but this is a good one, let's say. So now I can finally give the result. And the result is, yeah. Excuse me? Oh, no, in this case it's 1D dimension for the moment. Okay. So theorem, you assume the non-resonance condition, so NR. We assume NR and S1. And G of this form, let's say. Then, for any R bigger than 1, there exists some S star and tau from U S star to P S star. U is a neighborhood of 0. In PS, and tau is a canonical conformation such that when you compose H with tau, we obtain H naught plus Z plus the remainder term R, where first Z is in normal form, that means it only depends on the action and is a polynomial of order R plus 2, and the remainder term is small in the following sense, which is the supremum when Z two possibility. No, more efficient this way. So the Hamiltonian vector field of R calculate at Z in the norm S is smaller than a constant which depends on S. In the norm of Z, S power R plus 3 half. And this is true for all S bigger than S star. So it's small with respect to the order R plus 2. Because it is that. Okay. And this, okay. Then this is a theorem, the Birkhoff normal form theorem, and the consequences, okay, use this. Tau is analytic. And what is the dynamical consequences is a corollary. So with the same assumption, we know that for all R bigger than 1, for S bigger than S star as before, there exists some epsilon S strictly positive, such that if the norm of the initial datum is smaller than epsilon S, so is epsilon and is smaller than epsilon S, then for T smaller than a constant divided by epsilon to R, so for large time, we have the norm of UTS is smaller than 2 epsilon, so it's stable in some sense. And with the same Sobolev norm, S, and also the action are almost invariant in the sense that the difference between the action at time t and action at time 0 is smaller than constant, again depending on S. Epsilon cube g 2s for all j. Okay, so the action are almost invariant, and further, which is the second part of the corollary, there exist finite dimensional tools such that for any S1 strictly positive, the distance in slightly we have to lose something there, so the distance in the norm S minus S1 of the solution U at time T to the torus is controlled by epsilon constant, which depends of S1 actually, and the epsilon square. Yes. Well, for T of this range, okay. Well, we can take T epsilon R1, and then we have epsilon R2. Okay, so I have 10 minutes. So, no, not a good idea. I want this condition. So now, application to NLS and nonlinear wave. So what we have to verify is, well, first we have to verify S1, but S1 is true if V is infinity. So, okay, we have to assume that V is infinity. So what we have to verify is the non-resonance condition, that means this one. Okay. So what happens? First, for the nonlinear wave equation. So we call that omega j, in this case, are the square root of the, I wrote it in this way. Well, maybe lambda j, in the first case, lambda j are eigenvalues of minus vxx plus v. Okay, but I can consider this form of writing it, mu g plus m, where m is the mean value of v, and then mu g are eigenvalues of minus vxx plus v minus m. Okay? And then we can use this parameter m in order to verify the non-resonance condition, because when you move the parameter m, you move all the omega j in different ways, in some sense, because of this square root. And the results say that proposition, so take delta strictly positive, then there exists a set included in the interval 0 delta with full measure, that means measure of I is equal to delta, so that if M is in I, then the non-resonance condition holds. So it's not so difficult to verify this condition, let's say. Okay. is a case of nonlinear wave equation. Now what happened for NLS is a little bit more complicated because we cannot use the mean value of V. So for NLS, omega j are the eigenvalue of dxx plus v. There is no square root. So we have to define a space of potential v sigma, which is a space of vx sum of vk exponential minus sigma k cos 2kx when the sequence v is in L2. So this is a set of analytic potential. So we need infinity and we take analytic, but anyway. And we suppose that is a p-periodic and also even, so we have to choose this coefficient 2k. And on this space we can put a natural probability measure. Actually you define kind of Gaussian density on each vk, and then you take the product of this Gaussian density and you obtain a probability measure like Eugene wave in the okay. Well, natural with respect to unnatural. Okay. Anyway. L infinity? Yeah. Ah, okay, but Lebesgue is difficult in the infinite dimension. So anyway, we obtain the following result that there exists a strictly positive. There exists a set F sigma included in V sigma of full measure with respect to this density, this probability measure. And so that if V is in F sigma and if the norm of V is in L2 is less than A, then the non-resonance condition applies. So again, for a lot of potential, the non-resonance condition is satisfied. So I have 2 or 3 minutes. Yeah. And the problem is that as we want V to be infinity, well, we take analytic, but when we want to move the Fourier coefficient, we move VK, but the Fourier coefficient doesn't move a lot because of this exponential. That's the problem. And actually, to prove this, we use some arguments of Bourguin in the paper in GAFA. It's a little bit tricky to obtain this result. Okay, so maybe I take 2 minutes to explain the result in the d-dimensional case. Okay, so take NLS d, so pt minus px minus Laplacian p plus v star p plus derivative p bar g x c c bar, and then x is in the torus dimension d. Okay, first again we assume that g is infinity and also is of order at least 3, of course. Okay. So because we choose a convolution potential, the eigenfunction, the Cj in this case, are exactly the exponential. Okay? So it's easier. That's why we choose this convolution potential. And also the omega j are square of j plus the Fourier coefficient of v. So the spectral part is very easy. And as you know, in the d-dimensional context, the spectral property of the Sturm-Liouville operator is a little bit complicated, so that's why we have to assume something like that to obtain a simple spectral part. And then, of course, we cannot expect that this omega j satisfies this condition. Why? Because if k is equal to j and goes to infinity, then of course omega j is equivalent to omega k. So we have a problem. So the result we obtain, more or less, because I have no time to give the details, but with the same context, let's say, for typical for typical V, I have no time to explain what means typical in this case, but something like that. And for psi not small enough, L, okay, then we obtain again that psi of P in norm S is smaller than 2 epsilon. And what we obtain is that the action remains small, again epsilon cube, g, 2s, constant there, but only when g is sufficiently small, let's say n. And then when g is large, the estimate is different, where m is bigger than n, and I have to define gm. Gm is the sum of action ij when modulus of j is equal to m. So we have to put together all the action which correspond to index with the same modulus and large modulus. Okay. And n is something equivalent to epsilon minus 1 or 2 or alpha. Well, alpha is the same times as before. I mean, t is smaller than c epsilon minus r.
And for any
r? Yeah, for any r, excuse me. And there exists epsilon s, so that is true. So finally, we obtain a result which is what we can expect. Yeah. And S has to be very big, actually. But anyway. And maybe, well, one comment. If G does not depend on X, so this equation, this relation is true for all G. Because we can use some argument of zero momentum, and it's easier. So if G is independent of X, is simpler. Well, okay, thank you for your attention.